you know, truly to have a partner in crime, that's what makes this special. And, you know, I think everyone has what they remember, but I mean, the fact that I remembered, you know, Oriol Guillermo from, you know, who happens to live in Sweden, who's Spanish speaking, and we really can't say anything to each other, you know, but the fact that like I shared this life memory with someone else and didn't just like drown in the middle of the Pacific, you know, Baltic Sea on my own volition, like, I mean, that's so special to be able to share a, you know, a memory, good, bad, or otherwise, with someone else.
Welcome to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. I'm Chip.
And I'm Chris. And welcome to episode 19 of the show. Today we have Lars Fenanger of Odyssey Swim Run and a stout athlete in his own right. We're going to be chatting with him pretty much about his journey in the sport up until he started Odyssey Swim Run.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll have him back for that story.
Of course, and all the races that he directs and hosts. But yeah, it was a cool kind of the man behind the mask sort of thing, you know, that everyone knows the race director or it's to some extent, but Lars is still active swim runner with John Stevens. They race in Catalina, so got to hear about that. Really great interview. I thought we hit it off really well with him.
Yeah, totally.
Probably could have chatted for 3 hours.
Yes.
At least.
Indeed. And like I said, we'll have him back to chat about Odyssey stuff specifically down the road. But before that, how's training going?
Training is going all right. I think I am focusing on keeping up the consistency of getting, you know, even if it's 20, 30 minutes a day, 5-6 days a week, 4 or 5 days a week, and and going from there and just kind of trying to keep everything loose, making sure, you know, I'm not doing anything too silly to get injured.
Yeah,
you still crushing the Zwift bike?
Yeah, I've been pretty... So last week, I kind of took it as a recovery week. Yeah, and this week... I don't know. It's kind of just like how I'm dealing with it. It's like something I can control. I feel like I'm getting super fit, which is nice.
Yeah, I can tell you've lost weight.
I feel like I've lost weight. But what I'm losing in my dad bod, I'm gaining in just hair volume. So
if we really... I think we can officially announce that coming out of the COVID situation, the Low Tide Boys are going to go with a longer hairstyle. So I've decided I'm probably going to go a long Euro hairstyle. I don't know exactly what that is, but...
Like a Euro mullet?
I don't know if a mullet, but there is any suggestions for the fans, I'll be happy. I have just really straight blonde hair.
Yeah.
But it's kind of getting... It's getting pretty long. And then Chris is letting his, what do you call that whole thing?
I don't know.
Puerto Rican afro or something?
Yeah.
Okay. It's good. You got to always do something with it. Because Chris has, you know, messaged me or I've seen him without his face on, so to speak. And it's it's a little unkempt. It's a little Einstein-esque. Yeah. It could get whack.
Yeah.
Zany.
This is what I'll do for fans of the show. Okay, next time I have my hair with no product.
Oh, we'll put it on.
I'll post it on the stories.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, we'll both do that. And then we'll, you know, Isabella from Ad Nature, Arc Swim Run, braided
Arc
your
Souls,
hair. Arc Souls, Ad Nature. Sorry about that.
She's going to have more hair to braid.
There's a lot. Time. She's got her work cut out for the next race that she's there braiding hairs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty committed to continuing to train and also grow my hair out.
Yeah.
So.
I've just made sure my mustache is still around. Yeah, so who did we decide our shout-outs are for this week? I think fellow Novato.
Yes.
Ian Novato, we went over this already.
This happens before. Novadan.
Back-to-back Novadan shout-outs.
Novadoans.
Sarah has she had a 50K... canceled, I believe 100K, and I believe even 100 miler canceled.
Yeah, 100 miler canceled.
So she has been, you know, we follow her on Strava. There's the Low Tide Boys Strava group, if you want to join that, or club or whatever they call it. And so follow that, kind of follow fellow fans of the show and give kudos and thumbs up and all that good stuff. But she actually is doing that really crazy race across Tennessee.
Yes, it's 1,000 kilometers. You have
till August or something,
yeah,
right?
You have like 3 months to do it. Average is about, I think, like a 5K a day or something you need.
I thought it was like 5.6 miles a day or something.
Oh, maybe.
It was enough to where I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
it
was a lot.
Hard pass
I was
on
like,
that.
Yeah, no thanks. It's like power to you. But that race is actually, surprisingly, the guy who put it on is the same guy who puts on the Barkley Marathon,
yeah,
which is that insane, the race where no one finishes or no one's finished for the last several
right,
years.
Right, if you finish, you win pretty much. Because yeah, no one finishes it.
Well, even if you finish, you got to finish under a certain time. Anyway, it's
all the pages of Moby Dick.
There's like a Netflix documentary you can watch about it. But so he put on this idea for this virtual race, and it's been, I mean, it's been great. Everyone's trying to rip it off. There's a race across Colorado now, and all kinds of other stuff happening.
A race up or down California would be pretty long.
That'd take a long time.
That would be pretty long.
Yeah,
that could be the whole year almost. I know that's a challenge in Zwift, right? To ride.
Yeah.
The entire mileage of California something like that.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
here we are. I the chat with Lars was really great. And don't forget, we also have a few housekeeping things. We have our Wild Swim Run collaboration still on our site. Those orders keep trickling in. And whenever you buy merchandise, proceeds of that go, we're collecting it all the funds, and then we're going to get one of those big novelty checks and send it to Fanny and Mia to help sponsor the Wild Youth Initiative.
Yeah, hopefully one or two young women to get into this World Swim Run, which would be pretty cool.
And we're excited for them. I know Fanny in particular is just allowed outside to go. She's starting running and swimming again. So we're excited for that. And same for all of our friends over in Sweden. And wherever your shelter in place have starting being lifted. Don't forget, we also have bonus shows coming out soon where we're doing gear reviews. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Subscribe, tell a friend, and rate on iTunes as well. But without further ado, here is the interview with Lars Vinanger.
It's a good one. Enjoy it.
Today's guest is Lars Vinanger, who was born in Norway, spent a few years in Saudi Arabia, grew up there for 13 years, which is a very interesting just note.
I have some questions about that.
We are going to have some questions about that. He did his first triathlon in eighth grade PE class, which was organized by his dad. He's an Eagle Scout, and like the Low Tide Boys, he's a father of two. He has two daughters. He has a wife who is an accomplished swim runner in her own right, who won Norseman and is a two-time defending Casco Bay Islands winning women's team. Wow, didn't know that already. This episode shining light on my knowledge base. He played college baseball in college, has finished the Ironman in Hawaii, so the world championship, three different years. Xterra Maui World Championship finisher. He actually was a pro card holder in both triathlon and road cycling, 10 times Ironman finisher. His personal best is at Ironman Cozumel in 2009 of 9:02. That's blazing. That's blazing quick. He has worked at Triathlon Magazine. He is associate publisher at Slow Twitch. And as I'm sure most of the Swim Run community knows, he is the co-race founder and producer of Swim Run USA, Odyssey Swim Run. And welcome to the show, Lars.
Wow. Thanks, guys. That was awesome. Appreciate that.
So, Lars, Cozumel, quick question. Was there, like, no headwind that year, or were you just cutting through it?
Oh, man. This is going back so long ago now. So, you know, they have the down current swim. So, my swim was probably, like, 40 minutes. It's one of those, if you put a bag of chips in the water, it'll get there in 50 minutes. The course, I was living in Boulder, Colorado at the time, so I was used to riding mountains. That course, I could just... It felt like it was a tailwind all day. Probably was a tailwind all day. And then I was a horrible runner because I would cycle my brains out. And so I probably ended up walking the marathon.
Is that like a Lionel Sanders walk where he does a 250? Or is that a walk like you did a 345 and you probably could have done a low
345. Okay. I don't think I ever went lower than probably a 320 in an Ironman marathon.
So you just emptied the tank on the bike and
Always.
And just ran with what you had left.
Sounds like, what was that?
That time I thought it was fun. I thought it was like to see how close to the front of the pro race I could come off the bike and be damned what happened on the run. And so I think I was right behind Rutger Becky, who ended up winning the Belgian triathlete. And I think he ran a 2:38 or a 2:40, and I ran an hour slower.
Wow. You're like, that's like Starkey.
Well, Starkey or going in the Wayback Machine, Lieto. Wasn't he just like the bike guy, and then he would just die to Crowley on the
remember.
Run? Anyway, that's super weird.
Yeah, I would love...
Inside triathlon,
I lived in
baseball.
Boulder at the time when Craig Alexander was winning all his Ironmans, and I was a training partner of his on the bike. And, you know, but Craig, these guys, I call it keep your dick in your pants. Those guys always knew how to just hold back. And, you know, me, I would just go crazy and think, oh, you know, wow, I can hang. But, you know, in a race, it's basically it's who can go the, you know, the fastest, you know, the slowest kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so who can use the least amount of energy and go the fastest? And I was the exact opposite. I would use as much energy as possible and go the slowest.
So let's dive into that a little bit. You obviously have a ridiculous endurance pedigree and just sports pedigree.
So you're an athlete.
You're an athlete, obviously, and you've done all these events. Like, where is this coming from, this sort of desire to just go ballistic?
Well, I did grow up in a family of I'll say coaches and a sporting family. My grandpa on my dad's side was a college cross country running coach for 40 years. However, he was not a runner. He was a basketball, football, and baseball player. I think growing up in Saudi Arabia, you didn't have many sports to choose from. You had soccer, swimming, running, and baseball. And so I think I just gravitated towards swimming, soccer, and baseball. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, rode a bike because a small little oil compound, which you could ride your bike everywhere. I had a paper route. So, you know, it was always on my bike. That's just what we did as kids back then. And, you know, actually, I think running was my father was a gym coach and a principal at an elementary school. Hmm. And he integrated triathlon and running into the PE curriculum. And so I think I started running because he basically made us.
My joke about running is it was always my discipline for running my mouth in baseball practice.
Yes.
He'd be like, hey, Nicodemus, go hit 40 poles if you can talk still. You know, it was that whole thing. So, I mean,
you talk the whole time when you are out there on the course?
Do Chipper and I?
Oh,
yeah.
It's pretty impressive. We've done 100Ks together. We've done double century rides. We've done all kinds of ridiculous stuff.
We have
stuff.
Several 12 plus hour days and side by side.
Yeah,
for sure.
We always find stuff to chat about. I mean, if it's an important race, like if I'm like Chipper did his first 50 miler. Was it last
North
year?
Face 50,
North Face 50 miler. Mm-hmm. So actually, it saved some stories. And I was like, oh wait, I'll
tell you that on Saturday. Save it for Saturday.
But for the most part, we just can always keep the banter going.
That's when you know you're like a married couple. You know,
yeah,
it kind of
you
is.
Just don't want to use them all on your first date.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if it's a good choice story. You know, like if it's really funny, I try to save it for a special occasion. But yeah, in swim run, it's interesting because for us, you know, Casco Bay, which we've talked about on the show, we're just, you know, shooting the shit, doing our usual thing. And then at some point it just got serious and we kind of just stopped talking. And just
there's
like,
always
right,
that moment
have,
in races
have
where
work to do.
Where the conversation stops, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that moment was when we thought we had about a mile left, but it turns out we weren't even to the second half of the course because we got caught up in some of those currents over there in Portland, Maine. So we had done some bonus yards in the water. So we were a little bit pissed and we're like, all right, let's just finish this thing.
Yeah, let's go.
But we had a blast. But we're getting...
That would have been better. That would have been better had you thought that you signed up for the short course, but then it turned out that you were in the long course.
Yeah.
So you came up... Well, trying to steer the ship a little bit, but you came up from triathlon and you very early kind of got this or heard about Swim Run. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit of about that story, about your first, what was your first enlightenment to the Swim Run universe?
So, you know, I'd call myself a student of the sport and a student of sport. And so I've always been fascinated with reading and with, you know, with watching everything I could, you know, possibly ESPN growing up as a kid, you know, actually dating back to when I lived in Saudi Arabia, you know, be Armed Forces television, because we otherwise we'd get one sport a week. So we'd get one Italian soccer game. We'd get one right. football game, which was always like a season late, and we'd get one baseball game a season late. And so, you know, besides watching those one games a week, when the war came, the Persian Gulf War, we finally got Star TV, which was like American Forces television. And so for me, that was freaking awesome because now all of a sudden I could watch all these sporting events. I just had to convince my dad to let me stay up till 2 a.m. to watch them.
Right.
Because of the time change. So being a student of the sport, it carried over. When I started working at Inside Triathlon magazine, I was both an intern and an advertising sales rep. But I always wrote in college. And so I always somehow managed to convince our publishers to let me write as well. And they would let me do interviews and they would let me do the one issue a year that we had that was called the Tri Guide. And that just profiled races that were out there. And I never wanted to profile the cookie cutter races. I always wanted to profile the extreme and out of the box races because those are the ones that intrigued me. And so, of course, Slow Twitch was kind of the place where all the gear occurred in the triathlon world. It's a website forum where everything is talked about. And disclaimer, they are my current employer, one of my contracted employee gigs.
We'll try not to disparage them.
Yeah.
but a person who was on the message boards all the time back then was Jonas Kolting. And so Jonas, he did this forum thread where he basically said, hey, there's this weird aquathlon race happening next weekend in Sweden. Should I do it? And the weird aquathlon race that he was talking about was Ötele. Yeah. And you know, this is the first year that this couldn't even be called a race back then. This adventure thing happened. And there were like 10 replies and they basically said, yeah, you fool, do it. And,
Michael and Mots making fake accounts on Slow Twitch.
I think Mots even did reply in there and basically was like, hey, everyone else, you know, if you have any Swedish friends, tell them to come and do it. But Jonas was a freak. And, you know, he could do anything. And so Jonas ended up, I think he's done every single one. Well, I know he's done every single one. Yeah. But he triggered this light. So I knew that this thing existed.
Right.
Started writing about it in Inside Triathlon's Tri Guide as one of these obscure events to do.
Huh.
But I put it up against like the Eco Challenge or like an adventure race because it wasn't triathletes besides Jonas who were doing it. It was adventure racers. I mean, they were using things like inflatable buoys to, you know, to go across the swims
and you had camping mattresses.
Yeah, mattresses. They're using mattresses.
Mattresses and you had to wear lifeguard vests. It was a special forces type race. And so truly I thought if you weren't a Navy SEAL, you weren't invited.
Like only Goggins would do it now.
Yeah. And, the funny thing is I know quite a few of these SEALs and, you know, having lived in San Diego for a while, and there's really only a couple SEALs who I think would probably do really well at Ötele. I mean, they'd survive, but there were only a couple, Mitch Hall and Kerry Clausen are probably the only two who could ever have been competitive in that race. But I don't think Mats and Michael really knew what, you know, triathlon was. They were coming from an adventure racing background. So, but anyways, that's when I became intrigued with it. And, you know, that was probably about, 2007. And so, just started writing about it in the Tri Guide. Fast forward to 2014, and I had put on some small races in San Diego, these kind of obscure swim, bike, run, double super sprint style races. Hmm. And they really weren't doing anything, but I didn't want to put on a regular triathlon. And I don't know how I re-heard about the race, maybe like an outside magazine article or something. But I basically just told my wife, I have to go out there and cover this race because I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's kind of the right time. And because it was a race then, right? Jonas had basically by then told Mats and Michael, you have to get rid of the mattresses. You have to get rid of the life vests.
Yep.
Let swimmers swim.
Yeah.
Let runners run. And it was kind of like evolving into being a race. And so that made it less militaristic and more racing. And so the timing felt right in 2014. I reached out to Michael and Mats. They said, you know, absolutely not. We don't care who you are. We don't care who you work for. But if you want to come out to Sweden, it's very likely that someone will get injured or sick and not be able to race. And so I took the flyer and I went out to Stockholm and, you know, it wasn't completely a flyer on the wall. I was going to Germany for the Eurobike trade show anyways.
Yeah. Okay.
So I kind of joined the trips together, but, sure enough at the pre-race meeting, there was a, Michael said, hey, there's this, you know, weird American who is here. He's done the Northman Extreme, you know? So he's not a total, you know,
dead
fluff.
Weight. Yeah.
and if you,
yeah, his sanity can be questioned. Yeah. Therefore he's perfect.
And so if you need a teammate, you know, there's someone who has stuff, not the right stuff, but stuff, and he'll do it with you. And so sure enough, there was a Swedish Olympic swimmer who had come down with food poisoning.
Oof.
Was ill. And I didn't food poison him. But his teammate needed a partner. And so I was in. And the teammate, he didn't speak English. He spoke Spanish and Swedish. And I spoke a tiny little bit of Spanish and a tiny little bit of Norwegian, which can be kind of, you know, coupled as Swedish, kind of. And so
Nordic-esque.
Yeah. So for like 12 hours the next day, you know, this consisted of a little Swedish or Norwegian, a little Spanish, and a little English.
Just small talk, you know.
Absolutely had a blast.
What a great story. I mean, goes.
And you guys race well together?
Oh, I mean, you know, I went in just like for the life adventure, for the life points, you know, I didn't care. I mean, I had a triathlon wetsuit. It was a full 3/4 length profile design wetsuit. Being choked the whole time.
Yeah.
I had on a camelback. I didn't have a pull buoy. At some point he broke one of his paddles. So I gave him my paddle. So I didn't swim with paddles. I had Under Armour racing flat shoes, which are perfect on their slick rocks.
Jeez.
I mean, we were slipping, sliding, you know, everything under the sun, but, you know, loving every second of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the story in different contexts we've heard. It's like, there's this magic to it. How soon from the race beginning where you're like, oh my God,
you're hooked.
This is going to be a piece of my life. I'm going to dedicate attention to this.
Yeah. I mean, that happens immediately. However, there was nothing in the U.S. to go back and do. And at that point, there was only one other race in Engadine, Switzerland. And then Rockman had just been held earlier that summer. So there were three races worldwide.
Right.
And so fortuitously, I don't know how the hell this was the stars aligning. A guy who I had known from back when I was a young triathlon racer, I had actually slept. He had homestayed me for a race in Portland, Maine, Jeff Cole. He saw their recap on YouTube or, you know, Slow Twitch or whoever put it up on their website. And he emailed me and he said, "Hey, have you seen this? You know, we have something in our backyard here in Portland that would be perfect." And I said, "Jeff, I just did that. I'm actually in a hotel in Stockholm right now." And, you know, it was, Jeff and I had stayed in contact with each other over the years. This is probably 10 years after I had homestayed with him. But he essentially reached out of the blue and, you know, had a perfect venue in Portland, Maine, that we could do this in the US. So right then and there, the idea was hatched to have an event in the US.
And that sort of was the incubation of, well, what was Swim Run USA, but is now sort of Odyssey Swim Run. What an awesome story. And Chris and I did the first Casco Bay after Jeff Cole had passed, and just the whole presentation, everything. I mean, it was incredibly moving, and I mean, it was one of the most wild experiences.
He just sounded like just an awesome dude.
He just
dude.
Like the coolest guy.
It sounded like an awesome dude.
They always said that Jeff was like the younger spirited person of the two of us. And
but he's got 20 years on you at least, right? Or he did have 20?
He was pushing 60. But he had a hitch in his step like you wouldn't believe. He was like the ultimate, he wasn't an endurance racer, but he was made of grit. And so he was just your ultimate outdoorsman, like anything outdoors oriented, snowmobiling, you know, ice fishing, hunting. He loved hunting. So, you know, the fact that this race that he thought, you know, the mandatory equipment back then included a compass, and good Lord, had you come to the race the year before, Chipper and Chris, you would have thought that we were like, you know, parachuting you guys in, and you'd have to orient
like as an orienteering race or something.
Well, was the part of the race that Jeff thought was going to be the focal point, and he loved that. The fact that, you know, while you're swimming, you're going to have to be navigating the currents and tide charts with your compass. And, you know, thank God that, you know, it's more us triathletes who are kind of, you know, in the sport where we just put our head down and swim hard.
Right. Yeah. Just give me a flag.
Yeah. Just where do I need to end up? I'll try to make it there.
Well, you know, it's funny, Lars, because I was actually signed up for year one of Casco Bay, but I ended up being injured and not being able to go. So I was like, the second I saw that race, and I had learned about Swim Run from this book. It was the world's toughest endurance challenges. That had a whole, it just had a bunch of random, I think it was like a VeloPress book. Can list it in the show notes. It's pretty entertaining as a coffee table book. You're just like, oh shit, that looks crazy.
Like just the craziest.
It's like,
shit,
oh yeah, let's run across the Sahara. Okay, that's a real thing. So Atala was in that, and once I saw there was a race in the U.S., I asked this buddy of mine to sign up, and we
not
did.
Me. I will say.
It wasn't Chipper. I don't know what you were doing then.
I started building resentment is what I started doing.
and every once in a while, when you feel that rope tighten around your neck during the race, you feel that resentment.
Yeah, you just turns that screw a little bit. But I couldn't do it. And then, you know, life happened, had a kid, and I was just like, I really want to do this. And Chipper was the person I asked, and you know, he's the guy I can always go to. And I'm like, I got a really dumb idea. What do you think?
For the really stupid stuff, I'm always down for a yes.
That's what you need, right? I mean, you need a partner in crime. And, the sport is morph now where, you know, you can come into it from a few different kinds of angles. But, you know, truly to have a partner in crime, that's what makes this special. And, you know, I think everyone has what they remember, but I mean, the fact that I remembered, you know, Oriol Guillermo from, you know, who happens to live in Sweden, who's Spanish speaking, and we really can't say anything to each other. But the fact that like I shared this life memory with someone else, and didn't just like drown in the middle of the Pacific, you know, Baltic Sea, on my own volition, like, I mean, that's so special to be able to share a memory, good, bad, or otherwise, with someone else.
Yeah, and he's thinking the same thing on his end. you know, it's just,
I mean,
it's just
so
wild.
He's got a story to tell. Yeah, I ran with this Yankee, you know.
Like, his friends won't talk to him anymore.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's a really cool story about sort of the inception of Swim Run USA, or now what's now Odyssey. I'm curious, and this is something I feel is a little bit unique for race directors. You know, you're the owner, race director of Odyssey Swim Run, but you also participate in a lot of swim runs. So you did Catalina, Otolo Catalina with us, or I mean, you were considered ahead of us.
We started with them.
We did that. We started with you.
We started together.
We had beers the day before.
That's true.
That's true. And so tell us a little bit about how you do that. I mean, do you, your partner in Catalina was John Stevens, who is, I don't want to mess up his title up on Casco Bay, but he is like co-race director.
He's the fastest swimmer is what he is.
So he just tugs you around all day in the water.
Oh yeah. Yep. He's the great white shark in the water. That guy can, he can swim like a banshee, but the other part that is so, can't be valued enough, especially in a race like Catalina or Casco Bay, is he can read the tides. You know, thank God, like, he does not ask for my input in the water, but you know, the majority of the time where I'd be thinking, okay, well, we should just go this way, and he's swimming seemingly out to sea, you know, we get there so much quicker than had we gone my way. I mean, he's fantastic. He's smart. He was born on the water, so he gets it, and he's fast as hell. He has a collegiate swimming background, but he stays very fit as well. So yeah, we have a good time he's an assassin in the water, but he's just such a humble dude. So we have, you know, to me, like, if I was racing with someone who didn't want to have a conversation and just was looking for a result, that wouldn't be fun. Wouldn't do it. But John and I both kid that we're like, you know, we're dads. We have like these, you know, we're starting to have dad bods, and you know, it's like we have all the same stories. You know, we get sick from our kids bringing stuff home, and we're homeschooling the kids like everyone else right now. But you know, we have the same commonalities, so it's just a really fun team. But we've only raced the two Otolo races in Scilly and Catalina together.
Because
otherwise we let him loose with Casco Bay, and he just kind of fills in as a race director, really leading into the event more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Since we're on the subject, what did you think of Catalina?
It was fantastic. I mean, it was, I knew it was going to be epic. I had been out to Catalina one time before, and I had been on a mountain bike on the trails in between Avalon and Two Harbors. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was one of the most insane mountain bike rides I had ever been on. And so the fact that we were going to run some form of that, I knew was going to be insane. The swims were everything you could ask for. And I am so thankful that Natalie Foote, the day before, mm-hmm. the night before at the pre-race meeting, basically calmed the entire room by saying, look, I grew up here and I've never seen a shark.
Oh yeah. The shark question.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that calmed the entire room, even though I'm sure they were there. But, you know, I just think that course was so fantastic. I know how much work Andy, Natalie, Sean, you know, put into it, boots on the ground. And then I know how much work always Mats and Michael, any event you go to with those two putting on an event is going to be world-class no matter who the producer is. And so, but they crushed it. And so you had a course that was fantastic, and you had I thought it was really fun for Americans to be able to see how the Europeans are.
Yes. And yes, exactly.
Europeans they're 5 years ahead of us.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I feel like, you know, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And, you know, I mentioned this on previous shows, like, I work with race directors, I help them design and launch events, and to have this one all the work that went into it. I mean, we were interviewing people that were previewing the course multiple times.
Yeah.
You know, they were flying out from Sweden multiple times. It just really showed on race day that it wasn't. It could have easily been a shit show.
Right. They could have went on Google Maps and done a like, oh, this looks cool. And yeah, like, okay, this is what we'll do. Anyway, it turned out very well.
I don't know if Andy would tell you this, but he went out to Catalina over 30 times.
And wow. I don't know if I knew that number.
I know you've had him on the podcast, but he willed that thing to happen.
Yeah, him and the efforts of Andy Hewitt and Sean Durkin and Natalie Foote made that race the success that it was. And we are super excited to head back, and fingers crossed we'll be there in, was that February?
I think March.
March.
Isn't that crazy that that's if
that was like the only race.
It feels like the last racing
experience of the year. What a great one for us to have. How lucky we were.
Yeah.
You know, it even makes me fine with the fact that they started up that crazy ass hill, which otherwise
that was nuts. That was so nuts. And admittedly, like, Chris and I,
a world class field within 2 minutes of starting,
walking.
Climb over a fence. You're go over this gate real quick.
I mean, admittedly, Chris and I could have probably done a little bit more course reconnaissance, but we were standing in the start corral. And I actually think I remember looking at you, Lars, and John, and a couple of other people in the front, and I'm like, huh, they're all cabbed down. I wonder if we should, boom, and I heard the thing, and I'm like, oh, shit, let's start going. And before we knew it, I mean, I looked later on Strava, grades of 40 plus to 50% grades on some of those things. I mean, it was no joke. Like, you couldn't, I was looking for a gondola.
I don't think it was 40%, but yeah.
If it makes you feel any better, the guy who finished second, and he would admit it, he had a really rough day out there, Oscar Olsen. And this guy's a freak. He's maybe the single best swim run athlete. However, it's not an individual sport, but this guy's a badass. He was wheezing on that first hill.
Wow.
Absolutely wheezing. We didn't think he would, it didn't sound like he was going to make it to the top, but his, his teammate, Frederick Axgaard, who, you know, you would think like, geez, these guys are freaks. Like, you know, they must not work. Frederick Axgaard is like a CEO of a company. He's 41 years old. And Oscar Olsen runs his own business in Stockholm or in Gothenburg. I mean, these guys are just like, you know, us. And, you know, but Oscar is wheezing, barely making it to the top. And Frederick just says, you know, he's going to be okay on the downhill.
Active recovery.
And sure enough, he was gone, you know, he was shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. My quads are blasted for about a week after that.
Yeah.
Just on the first. Yeah.
I will say though, and we mentioned this before, where we live, we have the wide open downhill fire roads that we can hit anytime we want. So I actually thought that was probably one of our strongest parts of the race when we're coming down from that 10K run and just bombing down.
And the post race beer and veggie burgers.
Yes, we won that category.
We won that
for sure.
That's awesome. You know, we stayed on a boat, and
I was just gonna lead right into this boat that I remember. I want to say it was the second to last run leg, and I remember I'm like, "There's fucking Lars's boat right there. That motherfucker's probably already on it."
You know, I got to admit, like, I thought the captain was going to park a whole hell of a lot closer. Because we kind of had these grand visions that, okay, we'd be able to swim into the start and then swim back to the finish and be cheering people on from the boat. And, you know, let's just say those cabanas were pretty ideal at the finish line.
Yeah, that was a good setup you had for yourself.
Yeah, because we had to, like, get a little rent a boat to get back out to our boat. But, you know, it was pretty surreal to wake up that morning. We had sailed over from Avalon after that pre-race meeting that evening. And we essentially woke up at, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning, and we're staring straight at that hill that we all ran down at that first run leg. And, you know, so while we're sipping on coffee, we're just thinking like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty surreal to see the, you know, a portion of the course, you know, right there. But it was a beautiful race.
It was such a beautiful day. And I mean, the weather on Sunday, I certainly wasn't complaining about, but Saturday had even, if you can imagine, even better weather, I think probably low 70s potentially. And we had a little mist, I felt like, on Sunday, but I mean, the whole weekend was just great. And the island of Catalina, and I mean, we have an entire 3 or 4 episodes just praising this race, so we won't go too far into it. But what we did want to chat about a little bit is the Low Tide Boys and the Kraken Collective had a happy hour meetup with Precision Hydration, and Odyssey was there. And I was hoping that you would be able to tell the folks about a little bit about the Kraken Collective.
You know, Kraken Collective is something that we were ready to go balls out on, for lack of a being polished. You know, essentially we wanted to offer, you know, a lot of our racers who we, you know, we're the only thing that they'll get to experience. I mean, to be honest, like, a lot of Americans don't necessarily travel overseas, and there's not necessarily a lot of options to race yet, not overseas, aka not in Europe. And so, you know, we wanted to give racers something that could be more of a community feel, because otherwise they're just connected to their triathlon friends. And, you know, as you guys know, you're probably the two crazy guys who do that swim run event, and hopefully that continues to change. But, you know, in pockets like the Northeast, where, you know, we're really strong, you know, we have these racers who, you know, Casco Bay's on their calendar every single year. And, you know, last year when we had Boston, we had, you know, a lot of crossover athletes. And so we've kind of started cultivating this community up in the Northeast, and, you know, now in the Pacific Northwest as well. So we just wanted to tie those together with more of a community type feel, you know, throw some swag and apparel into the mix, have some training camps to get people ready for the courses, just kind of, you know, be the connectors between the races that were happening, so that when they got to race day, you know, they either had communicated with someone, you know, online, you know, through WhatsApp or through Facebook groups, or, you know, even a training camp. And so, you know, Kraken Collective was meant to be that, you know, this team, but, you know, with COVID happening, you know, we really dialed back on pushing that, because we don't want to hit people when they're maybe going through, you know, a bit of a pinch financially or what have you. So, you know, we'll see when the right time is to roll that back again, but you know, hey, Catalina, we sure had a great launch.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
It was
fun. And you had a Bronwyn and Greg repping the shirts on the podium.
That was a good little, that was good for sure. The wet.
Well, Bronwyn and Greg are fantastic. They've done, I think, every one of our races except for, they haven't done Michigan and they haven't done Orcas, but I mean, they're just awesome. They were great, great friends of Jeff Cole's, you know, with the races that he put on in New Hampshire and Maine before. I mean, they're just the two most upstanding people you could ever want to associate with. And I mean, they're badasses. Bronwyn is like 4'11" and just will crush you. You know, the harder the course, the better for her. I mean, she's just a machine. You know, Greg, you know, God bless him that he can hang on to her. You know, they're just crazy. And their little daughter, Gwen, is going to be, she's going to be, you know, the Pele of swim run when she comes of age.
I love that.
Yeah, totally.
I love that. So I have a question about Kraken Collective. You know, was the idea for that one is, because I know Team Envol, they're kind of doing the same thing. I mean, I guess that's coming from more of a coaching side, but also building community and connecting people and doing camps and stuff. Were you thinking something like that for the U.S., or was this model sort of community first and sort of training secondary or tertiary or something like that?
Yeah, well, in a way, I mean, you guys have triathlon coaches, right? In a way, there's not a swim run coach yet. Right. And so, you know, in some regards, we did want to help people who wanted to focus on swim run, even if it was just for a race, you know, 3 months ramp up. We did want to help people focus specifically on swim run racing. And, you know, we think that, you know, between the knowledge that John Stevens has and, you know, people like Bronwyn and Greg and people like myself and, you know, Aaron Pallion, who has been at every single one of our events.
Right.
We thought that we had the knowledge base to help get people prepared for races as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, and I know Nicholas and I know, you know, what he's doing with Anval, and I know he's had success at the, you know, the Otola races. And I know he's wanted to come and penetrate US, and, you know, we welcome him with open arms at our races as well. You know, as you know, there's, you go to an Ironman and there's, if there's 2,500 athletes, that means there's probably 2,500 coaches.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I mean, what if we're going to have like five coaches amongst the field? Like that's, that's probably a pretty good ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, we just want to prepare people for, you know, we're not going to dumb our races down. We put on very challenging races at our Odyssey races. We don't want people coming in underprepared. We want people to finish feeling a great sense of accomplishment for the types of races that they've, you know, the courses that they've, you know, managed to get through. And, you know, we feel that a big part of that is the journey that you go on leading into the race.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you're just, if it's an ordeal the whole time, because 2K a week swim volume, you know, that's just not going to make for a positive. I mean, in the
makes
end
for
of the
great
day,
memes though.
Makes for great memes. And that's definitely fodder for memes. But yeah, it doesn't make for a positive, magical experience if you're totally unprepared. And I think you can get away with a lot of that stuff and more standard, like a half marathon. I'm sure a lot of people can just bullshit their way
you
through that.
You could fake your way through with some stuff, yeah.
But yeah, a swim run with, you know, 10,000 feet of swimming or whatever, 10,000 yards of swimming.
I mean, you guys know, right? It's, you know, in a triathlon, once you're done with the swim, it's almost like, okay, let's close the book, end of the book, you know, start the new book. Yep. It's almost like an entirely new race. But, you know, the fact that, okay, after the first swim, 4 hours later, you're going to have another swim, and it could be the hardest thing you have to deal with. It could be the longest swim. It could be the swim with the stiffest currents. It could be, you know, the swim where your legs are cramping up. And so it's just a different sport altogether. And, you know, I think there are unique things that, you know, we want athletes who do our race or do any race to be prepared for. And I mean, look, do we necessarily have an interest in becoming a coaching company? Absolutely not. We just want people who do our races to be prepared for the adventure that they're about to experience.
Right. I mean, makes sense to me. Plus, you get that community thing. I mean, the sport is so young. I mean, Chipper and I always kind of like, just kind of, you know, when we're seeing the people reaching out to us, asking us questions, all this stuff, like it's just
surreal.
It's just so surreal, but you know, at the end of the day,
yeah, everyone's learning, right? It's
everyone's
almost
learning.
Like,
I mean, it's
like
such
the first inning.
Yeah, it's such a small tent, right? It's such a small tent. And, you know, in January, late December, Chipper and I come up with this idea. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know, it'd be a really funny listener acquisition strategy. Just make fun of triathletes and swim run. Like,
I love it.
Just make fun
of
everybody.
I mean, you guys came in at a big time. You know, I know that you asked everyone and you asked, you know, what can we do to make the sport grow? And you
damn
know,
it,
I got
Lars,
a few
you're still
on
my question.
Yeah, that was our next question, man.
So Lars, what do you think would help swimrun grow in the U.S.?
I know, and I was just about to say, you know, I've got kind of this the devil on one shoulder, the angel on the other shoulder, which means I wanted to. I mean, okay, I
what does Lars? What does Lars think?
Right?
Not
I wanted
not
to grow
us.
Organically yeah. in a way that isn't forced. You know, we couldn't, but you know, if you threw a ton of money and just marketed the hell out of, you know, go marketing to every triathlete under the book, you know, through Facebook or through YouTube and you know, whatever it is, are you going to like the end product? And are you going to like who shows up to your races? And are you going to like the look and the feel of what it's like? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that is yes. And so, I'm less worried about it growing into the next triathlon because we like, because it's not triathlon.
Right.
And I think 100% makes it like it because it's not triathlon. And so, I mean, I think swim run is much more like gravel cycling than and ultra marathoning than it is triathlon. And because those have vibes that are, let's have a beer at the end of the race. Let's, you know, if I slip and fall, I'm not worried about getting a personal best here. You know, right. I'm not going to leave you behind. I'm going to help you out. And, you know, I'm going to stop in the middle of the race if there's that couch that I can take a picture with, because wow, that'd be funny. Or, you know, Marcus Martin and some of these others who race with a GoPro, because they don't take themselves too seriously. I think that's all really cool stuff. And so I don't think we have to grow too quickly. I think we grow organically, and get the right people in the sport. I think that's maybe the better answer. But where I was going with that was, I think you guys came into this into the sport at a great time, because, you know, you're lovable. You have these memes that are just hilarious and like will bring a new person in who's not so serious, and, you know, who realizes, look, these guys don't take themselves seriously. That sounds like a lot of fun. I want to have a lot of fun. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be this super serious sport. It can be a sport that's fun. It can be a sport that's really hard. And, you know, we just want it to be really inviting. So, you know, I don't know. I think we're all trying to do the right things. And I don't have the silver bullet. I don't have the magic answer.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a very, very good answer and very closely aligned, if not.
Oh yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, just coming, you know, we're talking to you as Lars, not as like Mr. Race Director, but having that come from a race director, I think that's just really noble, where it's just like, hey, you know, this should grow in the right way, the way it needs to grow. I mean, you know, you're talking about our show. I mean, one of our values for the show is really like, hey, we want to grow this in our image. We don't want it to be super type A. We don't care if you're first or last. We want it to be inclusive, diverse, welcoming, the whole nines, right? Which is, at some point, if you have age groups and turn into a time trial, then that could go away. But
I think it sounds like what Lars said and what our show values are, whatever, are so parallel to what Otolo and the founder, you know, founders have. I think that's kind of why it's all growing in such the manner that it is, and it's been able to maintain its.
Well, look at their flexibility, ethos. Chipper. You know, the fact that they started out basically as an adventure race and were willing to listen to one of their racers, yet, you know, Jonas is a pretty outspoken guy. He's not going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, we've had him on.
I mean, he basically told them, change the sport, change it.
Yeah.
And they changed it. And so right away, it shows a certain amount of flexibility, right? And, you know, those guys, I mean, this is the part of swim run I love, is that, and we get some, you know, we definitely get the people who are emailing us 6 months in advance, 9 months in advance. Hey, what's your race course?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'll give you a 90% sure race course, but this thing could change the week before. It could change the day before. I mean, swim run is a weird thing where you make game time decisions. And I know that doesn't necessarily feel right to a rigid person coming from triathlon, you know, triathlon, where they know the exact distances,
right?
But that is the sport that we're in.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris and I think we have to share the story now, but if we're being frank, we were a little bit still on the half triathlon type A thing at Casco Bay when we did it.
Yeah. We hadn't fully achieved our post triathlon zen.
And we were irked, I will say, at like when I would look at my watch after swim, I'm like, damn it, that said 1600 on the thing, but I just did 800 or 1800 or whatever. And I'm like, oh, this is you know, I was getting mad.
Yeah.
But literally by the end of the race, we were pissed because we had, you know, gone slower than what we wanted. And, you know, we were tired and bonking and all this stuff. But the second we crossed the line, I looked at Chris. I'm like, we got to define more of these. Like, this is the most insane fucking thing.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because even like the race itself was a microcosm for our sort of emotional journey, kind of being done with time trialing and doing things solo and being more like, all right, like what's the next crazy thing that we can do? And yeah, and kind of like halfway through the race where we kind of stopped chatting as much and just kind of went for it. started realizing we had to do work, like that's when actually when I really started loving it. I mean, jumping off the dock was awesome.
So cool.
I remember looking at Chipper and I was like, at the pre-race meeting, he's like, you can jump off the dock or you can, you know, go down the side. And I just look at him. I'm like, we're jumping off the dock. Like, you're not going to pussy out. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, I just think it's really great.
I'm glad you guys did. But you know what? At the same time, you know, we want people to have that decision. If you want to jump off the dock, jump off it. If you want to go down and you know, get in the water through the ladder, go down the ladder.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like whatever you're going to be comfortable with, it's like it accepts everyone. And you still got to swim across the Portland Sound,
and,
you know?
And to be honest, it's probably faster going the dock because like the second I jumped off, I had like a yard sale in there and I'm like, where are my goggles? Where's the tether? And you know, all this stuff. So it's probably faster just to go down the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you don't necessarily practice that in the pool, right? Jumping in and holding onto your goggles in, you know, pull buoy goes when you hit the water from 12 feet up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, Lars, I feel like we could probably chat with you until the wee hours of the morning and knock back a couple more beers here over Zoom. But we,
you know,
really...
Chipper, I gotta say one more thing. You know, as a Minnesota Twins baseball fan,
I was pretty excited
about the fact, you know, I think I told you this, that you know, the first year when you did our race and we had someone on the starting line whose name was Chipper, I instantly thought of the Atlanta Braves, Chipper Jones, who, you know, the Minnesota Twins did beat them in the World Series in 1991. Thank you, Kirby Puckett. And, but I was pretty, you were instantly one of my favorite racers just by default.
Wow. Haven't even towed the start line. In my defense, I was not a Braves fan at that time as I was only 4 years old, but I did grow to be a Braves fan starting in 1995 or so, after Chipper Jones's rookie strikes, after the strike season.
You guys
season.
Also went on to win a few World Series as well. A
couple division titles, World Series. Anyway.
Not as many as they should have.
Yeah, but. I can't get into that. It's triggering for me. So, Lars, where can people find out about you and your story and Kraken Collective and Odyssey Swim Run? Plug away, sir.
You know, I think the biggest thing is I don't do much personally. You know, I do write and do quite a few interviews on Slow Twitch, which is, you know, where I spend my non-Odyssey, you know, working hours both there and at Let's Run. But Slow Twitch actually lets me write from time to time, which is pretty cool. So, you know, but I think, you know, Instagram probably is, you know, like most things, but I think I push all the cool stuff to Odyssey Swim Run. And so, you know, Instagram at Odyssey Swim Run.
Nice. Yeah we were, actually
link that in the show notes.
Yeah. We'll link all the good stuff to all what Lars is doing there in the show notes.
And Chipper, you gotta do the link to, to the game winning hit in the 91 World Series as well. Okay.
That's a request.
Was
Damn.
That, What I don't even know that.
It was like
Kirby Puckett?
It was like a gapper. It was like a double to the wall.
No, the outfield was in. He just had to hit a sack fly. He hit it over the left fielder's head and so it was a sack fly, but it was a game winning run.
Was this the Sid Slid series?
Was that
the game before Sid Bream?
Sid Bream. Sid Bream.
No, that was a different one. But game six, the day before, was where Kirby Puckett hit the homer into the, which is now, well, the Metrodome, had a golden seat, which is where he hit the ball. But that was off, I think, Charlie Lieberman. And yeah.
My Braves knowledge is not too strong.
Yeah, Chipper was too young, but us normally aged people, I remember that series.
I mean, I know the Maddox, the Glavin, the Smoltz, Steve Avery, Mark Wohlers, John Rocker, all the
rookies at that time.
Yeah,
and
then
Chris, you got to hear this story quick. Baseball. So after our Boston swim run, which we did last year, it took the whole staff out. I mean, that we worked like horses at that race.
I mean, honestly, I can't believe you were even able to put that race on. That just sounded like a logistical nightmare.
Beast. That was a beast. But you know, we're in Boston, and so that night we went to a Dodgers Red Sox game.
Oh.
And we're so smoked that night. I have great pictures of John Stevens just sawing logs, and he's a Red Sox fan. He was like asleep the entire game.
Nice. Well, Lars, why don't you send one of those to us, and we'll put it on our Instagram account.
I'm surprised that security didn't kick you guys out. I fell asleep in the bleachers once, and I was next thing I know, I woke up on Lansdowne Street.
Oh yeah, you know I'd love to say that.
It doesn't make you a bad person.
I'm gonna put sleep in quotes, by the way.
Right? Yeah, you fell asleep, like your body started shutting you down.
Oh man, yeah, you guys. You know what? With it sounds like you guys like a few cold ones, and so I got to say, you know, if you ever find your way over to Sweden, you know, the original four who conceptualized that race, one of the guys,
He's got a thirst.
He has to shut down the bar. And so after the race,
Jesus,
like he has to be the last one to leave. And so he's going to be there all night as long as you keep drinking with him.
Oh, wow. Challenge accepted.
We need to get this guy's email address.
I guess we have to qualify for the race first.
I'd love to say it's either, you know, Mats or Per or Petter, or I'll figure it out. I mean, he's a great guy. So fun, but yeah, I mean, he's an awesome guy, and they're all great storytellers as well.
Sounds awesome.
Awesome.
Well, Lars, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some of the history of the sport with us and everything that you're doing. And yeah, we'll see you out there.
Thank you guys. Thanks for all you do.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Low Tide Boys, a swim run podcast. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're so inclined.
You can also sign up for our newsletter at lowtideboys.com. That's boys with a Z. And check out our meme page at The Low Tide Boys on Instagram. If you have any questions or suggestions for the show, drop us an email at lowtideboys@gmail.com.
We'd like to thank Writing Easy Records for our show music and, of course, our wives for their support and tolerance of our swim run activities, hobbies, and other bullshit we do.
Finally, you can support our efforts on Patreon. Until next time, get out there and go for a swim.
And then a run.
And then another swim.
Then another run.
And then another swim.
And then run to the finish line. And just keep going until you're done.
Yes. Or
until
run
you
to
cross the finish line.
Or run to the car.
Or run to your car.
Somewhere. Just keep running. Peace.